All right, so you are the technical director for Criterion, right? And you oversaw this restoration of the Apu trilogy.
That's correct.
So when they bring you in, what's kind of the first thing that you look for?
Well, I mean, you know, the first thing we do, whether we know what anything looks like, is we have to see what's out there. So that means, you know, usually you're only as good as your film. So the first thing we have to do is start by finding the most original film, and that's usually the negative. In this case, you know, we didn't know that the burnt negative was at the Academy, so what we did was we started looking at dupes that were made from it. They were, you know, positives and negatives made from the negative and subsequent preprint materials that we pulled in from various places. The Academy had some, we had some here in our holdings, and they were also a few things that we found that looked like they could be interesting that were held by the BFI in London, the British Film Institute. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we started looking at most of the things, and we weren't blown away by anything. They were, you know, a lot of the dupes were made quickly and crudely and in India way back when the movies first came out, and you know they were. You know, I'm sure their resources were what they were at the time, but they weren't really anything that was something you'd want to use for a restoration. It was just material that looked like it had seen better days. It didn't have a great grayscale. It was damaged. It was dirty. It was all the things that you don't want to have to deal with when you start restoring. I mean, you know you have to deal with those things, but it's the thing that you try to eliminate the most from the equation so you can actually get something good to begin with. So Discouraged, I think we kept pushing, and then we found that these negatives had been moved way back when, after the fire, to L.A., and they were actually sitting in boxes in the Academy's vaults. So, you know, not leaving a stone unturned, we said, yes, we want to see them, and we, you know, hastily pulled in the boxes to the lab we were working at the time, and we opened the boxes to see what was in them, and the cans were opened, and then we literally saw burnt pieces of film. And you couldn't even pick some of the reels up because they were brittle and they were flaking off, and it wasn't something that most people would just put the cover back on the box and say, well, we're not going to be able to do this. But we thought, well, these are here for a reason. Let's try to at least see what's in between the sprockets and see if there's actually a good image there.
Right.
So this was on Aparajito. We found that one of the reels looked remarkably better than the others. It seemed to be one that you could pick up and put on a light table and actually take a look at and evaluate. And what we saw looked pretty good. So what we did next was we persuaded the scanning technicians at the place we were using. This was at Sony in L.A. at their lab called Colorworks at the time. And we said, please, just scan 60 seconds of it, and let's just see what type of image is there. Because that's really right. The true way of looking at these things is, you know, scanning it in a high resolution and seeing what it looks like under, you know, basically a huge magnifying glass. So we pulled those images in, and we had a look, and we said, whoa, this is pretty exciting.
Do you remember which scene of the movie it was that you
saw? I do. It was a scene where the mom was washing something.
Okay.
And it wasn't a bright scene. It was like inside at night, or inside with few lights on. So we scanned those and we looked at it, and we were pretty damn excited about what we found. But we were probably overzealous because that was not indicative of the rest of the movie. It really, you know, clearly was the best reel of all the reels of any of the films that were salvaged from the fire. So we got a little excited and we decided to really, you know, go deep into this project. So we pulled everything in and we started scanning it and we started repairing all the negatives in Bologna at our lab there. And we really, you know, we spent the next few months really just getting it ready to scan. And that meant removing sprockets and fixing splices and repairing tears. And, I mean, it was endless. Everything you could think that you had to do, you had to do. You had to rehydrate the film because it was so brittle and it didn't wouldn't scan right over the scanner. You had to flatten it out because it was warped because of the heat. It was just, you know, one thing after another until so we put the technicians in Bologna to the test, and we made them do a lots of work on it, and we spent about 1,000 hours just on film repairs.
Explain to our listeners, you know, break it down like I'm a 4-year-old, how this actually works. You know, some listeners I might not be familiar with film terms at all.
Sure.
How does a restoration actually work from a technical level?
Well, in a restoration like this, it works quite differently, really, because a typical restoration is you find the best film, you scan it at a higher resolution, and then you do your use your digital tools to clean it up afterwards. And there, you know, it can be a lot of work depending on the shape of the material. But typically, you know, it's a workflow. It's been proven. It takes time, but it's pretty simple, and we can go forward and have some beautiful images underneath that.
So in that regard, on a typical one, it's mostly digitally, you know, grading going on.
Yeah, the digital grading and the digital tools to restore, like literally drawing out a tear and replacing it with material that's not torn. Finding a piece of dirt that's there and drawing it out and using clean material from a frame before or a frame after,
right,
to fix that. Those kind of things. In this case, we couldn't even get to that step until we fixed the film.
Right.
Because if the film wasn't repaired, you couldn't even get a scan out of it. And that's the thing you need to do anything else. So we cleaned it up, we repaired it, then we scanned it, then we did use the digital tools to get to where we typically go. And it also meant that we had to use digital tools that we didn't normally use. Like we had to use tools that could deal with warping, which, you know, you don't usually get in such a big level when you just are doing a regular restoration. But here we have film that went through fire, so it literally melted. So, you know, that those kind of things really led to it being very untraditional. And really, you know, at first when we found this film, we honestly didn't know how to handle it. We had to pick up the phone and call lots of people and say, okay, have you ever dealt with any burnt film before?
Right.
Film that literally went through a fire and was pulled out and salvaged. And, you know, the answer was pretty much no. I mean, really, who had? And the problem being really wasn't that people hadn't seen this before, because there have been fires within film laboratories before and film salvage, but the people that knew how to work with these things were either long gone or retired.
Right.
So our choice of educated technicians was not really very easy to find.
Right.
So once we found these guys, especially in Bologna, where these people, they've seen everything. I mean, they're one of the few places in the world that know how to deal with such a crazy, crazy entity, you know? they've got film there that has been, you know, we go there and we walk around their vaults and we say, what happened to this, you know? So they say, oh, yeah, you have fire film, yeah, come on, bring it on. We can take it.
Awesome.
So they took it and they did what they needed to do. Now, not all of the film, even though it was in the cans, was repairable, because the fire really had gotten damage to many of the heads of the reels and tails of the reels, and because depending on how close it was to the heat, depended on how it was affected.
Yeah.
So that was something we had to work. We had to really discard quite a bit of the movies because we couldn't really even repair them. Some films were luckier than others. On Aparajito, we did better. That we had a lot more. We had about 60-something% of material that we were able to use from the negative. Padmanchali, we found about 40%. And Apasansar, unfortunately, the number was pretty much zero, because we only had 2 reels of the negative that survived anyway, and they were in such bad shape that they just weren't something that we could correct digitally or with film repairs.
So what happens to those pieces that were unusable?
Well, I mean, those pieces, they go back in the can, and hopefully one day somebody will have even better tools to be able to work with that stuff. And, you know, as these things progress and get better, those things can happen. But right now, we can't work with those. What we had to do for the remaining 40% of Paragio was find suitable replacement material. And that meant going back to the dupes.
Gotcha.
And the prints.
Gotcha.
And all those other things to find footage that looked as good as we could possibly find, and then sign off on it. So we created this big edit decision list, which is basically shows you what shots are coming from which film.
Your EDL.
Your EDL, exactly. And our EDL told us what we were going to use. So if we couldn't use the negative here, we used maybe source A or source B or source C.
I got you.
Sometimes there was a D and an E.
I got you. So those leftover sequence gaps, we'll call them, were filled in by the duplicate.
Correct.
Okay. But give me the percentages again of for each three of the trilogy?
Yeah, I think, Peter, wasn't it 65% of Parajito? Was that what the number? 60%. So 60% of Parajito, 40% of Padapanchali, and 0%, unfortunately, of Opera Sansar.
I got you. But
yeah,
you
which
are...
were from the negative, exactly. This was how much we used from the negative. Now, on Opera Sansar, we were quite lucky because there was it was the third film made in the series. He was a better filmmaker, meaning that he had better resources, better labs, better technicians, better editors, maybe better cameras, whatever it was that he could do. The film was clearly better made as an established filmmaker, and it was printed on a piece of Duke Positive stock that was really, really good. So, luckily, if that was the film that we were missing, we had the best replacement material for it.
Cool. Explain to our listeners, go into how awesome 4K resolution is, like what it's going to be like for them to actually see something projected in 4K when they come to see these.
Yeah. I mean, if you can see these films projected in 4K, it's the way to do it. I'll tell you why. And not everybody projects in 4K, especially art house cinemas and things like that. But we're getting there. We're all slowly getting there. But, we know that resolution of 4K is very close to film resolution. We estimate film resolution to be somewhere around 5K. So when you do a 4K scan, you really are getting most of the resolution out of that film, especially in original negative.
Right.
So basically what happens is if we do the scan in 4K and the restoration in 4K and show the DCP in 4K, we're achieving the maximum resolution that we can at this point all the way through the project. Mm-hmm. And if you're lucky enough to see it on a 4K projector, your mind's going to be blown. Because I'm not kidding when I say that, because when we saw it for the first time in 4K, we sat there with our mouths open watching this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. What are we ever going to, technology-wise, are we ever going to achieve 5K? How far out do you think that is?
Oh, it's not far out at all. I mean, the problem is, there's 8K, and we are doing that, not we, but people are, film companies and studios are doing that when needed. Okay. For instance, Lawrence Arabia, where you have a 65mm negative, which is almost double the size of 35, your 8K really becomes necessary then, because that's really going to get you the most out of it. And as an archival medium, you really do want to try to archive at the highest resolution you can do, and really that you can afford, because every time you increase the resolution of something, your budget goes up.
Absolutely.
And we're not talking about a little bit. 4K is really four times the price. 8K is really eight times the price. It just works out that way. And that also means four times the data and eight times the data.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already dealing with, if you're dealing with a 2K film, which is 2 hours long, you're somewhere around 2 terabytes.
Man.
Most people don't even know what 2 terabytes looks like, but it's a lot of data.
Right.
You're already up to 8 terabytes when you're at 4K. Now think about that when you're trying to move that incredibly large amount of data.
Just to migrate it between hard drives.
Just to get it from one hard drive to another.
Yeah.
You're talking about a whole night.
Yeah, exactly.
So all those things add up to just what really is could be, catastrophic in the fact that you're dealing with so much material.
Absolutely.
And because we had multiple replacement materials on things, we had 8, 16, 24, 32 terabytes of data on one film. It was a lot of data management.
But it's got to be that much more gratifying now that it's done, and the challenge of it must make it that much more gratifying.
Now that it's done, we all look back on it and say we did great, and we're super proud of what we did. But at the time, I think I had almost a couple of engineers leave, and
a couple of
technicians. It's like watching paint dry sometimes with these really slow things.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so we, folks here in D.C. will be able to check out the Apu Trilogy in its stunning new 4K restoration at the landmark E Street Cinema in downtown D.C. And I just thought it would be a cool time to do this with you guys, because also across town up at the AFI Silver, they're going to be unveiling a 4K restoration of The Third Man this week. So that you get, we have two cool options of these great classic films that are going to be looking better than ever.
Definitely. That's really exciting, too. You do. You've got some really good choices to make there.
Were you? Well, I know. Third Man at least was in the Criterion at one point. Were you involved with that at all?
I wasn't involved in this new remastering, but I do know the people that did it. They're the same lab that we did use for some of our Apu stuff. They've done remastering us for Don't Look Back, the Nicholas Roeg film.
Oh,
they've done.
That's a wild movie, right there.
It's a wild, it's a great movie, and you know they're a great lab, and they've got some great technicians working there. So I trust that they really did a bang-up job on it.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Lee, thanks so much for walking us through a little of the technical stuff, and just personally, thanks so much for all the painstaking efforts to restore these movies.
My pleasure.
Just to close it out here, what is the importance to you to keep these classic movies alive? I know, you know, Scorsese has been, it's been a you know, something he's been stressing over the last couple years, and you know, why dig into the past and revive these things?
You know, the reason is, you know, there's films really just do bring us back to a place and a time, and all these films really mean something to a lot of people. And if you haven't seen them, you know, we're envious of the people that get to see a lot of these things for the first time. You know, I was a person that, you know, that hadn't seen Don't Look Back for some reason or another, just passed me by. And when I saw it for the first time while we worked on it, I thought to myself, what the? Why have I never seen this movie? And, you know, we want people to say that with the Apu Trilogy. I mean, we want to say, why haven't we seen it? We know why they haven't seen it, because they probably haven't looked very good or been out there in good editions. But now there's no excuse. You know, just go out there and see the Apu Trilogy, and you will be moved and realize that you're seeing a really great piece of art.
Yeah, and some people that might be, you know, explain it to someone that might be kind of ignorant to this idea. Maybe they think that something old is, you know, something they think it's going to look faded and, you know, and grainy, like maybe they when they watch an old TV show or something.
Yeah.
Explain to them how it is almost like the notion of time is almost erased now. Explain that it's like watching something that was just shot today once it's restored nicely.
Once you see it restored and in 4K in a big theater, it will be like seeing it for the first time. It might even be better than seeing it for the first time, because now with digital projection and the tools that we use to create these things from original negatives, you're probably seeing something in the theater now that you couldn't even do back when these films first came out. They just look and sound better. We just have better, ways to show them now, and that's just a fact. You know, even a great print at the time might not look as good as these new DCPs, and you know, I'm envious of the person that's going to go see these, because they're going to feel like they're seeing something brand new.
Awesome. Well, that's where our listeners come in. Go make Lee Klein envious by go see it for the first time and enjoy it.
Definitely.
Thanks so much for doing it, and good luck on the next project.
Thank you very much.